The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to my Saturday afternoon program of September 8, 2012. The interview program that I had planned did not come off, but I do have an interview for you at the top of the second hour featuring a new program host here at the White Network. I'll save all the details until then, and we'll just reiterate, because it can't be said too many times, that his program will debut this coming Wednesday, September 12th. I've been trying to figure out, because of the timing of this program, which is live, and the way that my personal schedule goes as far as eating and so on, what to do about eating before the program. And I thought I had a good solution today, but it didn't turn out to be. So I hope my throat doesn't get in the way in the beginning until I get it all talked out. You know, talking really helps to clear your throat out. You have to talk for a while to do it. Somebody told me one time that when I first started doing radio, that the thing to do before a program, before you started a program, was to swallow a raw egg. That this is what the opera singers did, and it clears your throat. So I used to do that, and I didn't notice any problem, but I did that today, and I seem to have some whatever got caught there from that egg. I didn't swallow it all at once. I actually kind of ate it. I eat all my eggs raw, for your information, but I won't go into the reason for that, actually, because it's better for me. But I'm still, I'm just trying to make some excuses in case I have any, give you some reasons in case I have any throat problems. All right, well, what I decided to do for today's program is to discuss some of the issues I might have discussed with my guest, only in a different way. This kind of reminds me of when, Gordon, I was doing a recorded show with Gordon Duff just a few days before the scheduled program, and he decided he didn't want to do it after we had talked for a while, and then after that I was a little bit in shock, but then I decided, well, I'll just do this program about Gordon. Now I'm not going to do quite the same thing today with my guest who disappeared, because it isn't the same situation at all, but I'm still going to go ahead with some of this because it's very much on my mind, and I think it's one of these cases where it will be instructive for all of us. So let me just start out by saying that the Voice of Reason website is back up, and Dietrich, who I had asked to be my guest, I think it was back in, I've got the emails here, but it was back on last Monday or even Sunday, and he agreed to do so and didn't have any problem with it. Anyway, he is the one who brought the website back up, which shows that he still has access to the server, and he was able to post the programs that had been recorded but not published yet. And this means that Mike Connor never took control of the server away from Dietrich and put it into his own hands, as he had told me he was going to do. That's the best I can figure out from there. Because one time in early, I think, 2012, VOR went offline, and Mike couldn't get in touch with Dietrich to take care of it, and he was angry, and he said that he was going to change that permission thing to put himself in charge. Only one person should be in charge, but obviously he didn't do that, and so it also tells us that Dietrich was the one who set up VOR technically, and who ran the behind-the-scenes operation in the beginning. Probably plenty of people know that, but many people were unsure of just how it started and how and who was in charge in the beginning. I'm going to look at some of that today in this first hour. I want to say that I'm talking about Dietrich Mullis. When I first wrote to Dietrich, I didn't know his last name. You know, he's mostly just known as Dietrich. And I wrote to him. This was on Sunday, September 2nd. Would be a week. It's a week today, a week ago today. And I asked him to come on the program. And he answered and said, sure, I'll come on. But talk to me midweek to be sure, because things are a little nuts with the new baby and so on. And we can touch base. That would help me keep track of the days. So I told him I would contact him again on Wednesday. And then I wrote to him again about another matter, and which I guess I just won't even bring up. And he answered me again, saying that that would be all right with him, but it was up to me, and just let me know what you want to do. I'll be, he was planning on being there on the show Saturday. That was on Monday. So I wrote him again on Wednesday to remind him and give him some instructions and so on. And he, let's see where I am. Well, I seem to have lost some of this when I was moving things around. All right. But he didn't answer. Maybe I don't have it here because I didn't get an answer. So I thought, well, I'll wait till Thursday. I didn't hear anything from him Thursday. I thought, well, I don't want to bug him. Maybe he's busy. And I had heard that he had, I know that he mentioned it to some other people that he was going to be on my program on Saturday. So I thought, well, he's just busy. He's planning it and I won't bother him. So I thought, well, I'll email him on Friday morning. On Friday morning, I did, and I still didn't get an answer. And I thought, I'll wait till 6 p.m. and then I'll just change my plans and send out an announcement. Now, this was already Friday evening and my show is today. That's yesterday evening. I still had not heard anything from him. And so I send out my announcement eventually, saying that I didn't know exactly what the show was going to be about. And in the meantime, I've put this together. And let me move on down here. Okay, I have to move down here. The reason that I am talking about this is because, well, at first I thought, well, that's the way it goes, you know, and don't complain about it on air. You know, just figure out something else and do it and just mention it maybe. But it continued to work inside me. And when I say that, I mean, you know, it just doesn't leave me alone. And I finally understood why and why I thought I should talk about it. Because really, folks, anyone, unless he is in a hospital on life support, can manage to send an email. One little email stating, sorry, have to cancel, circumstances beyond my control. I mean, that's enough. Even, sorry, I can't be on your show Saturday. Even that's enough to just tell the person, you know, that in a definite way, you know, rather than just leave them hanging. And when a person says that, well, they're very busy and they need to be reminded and all that, you know, you figure, well, they're very busy and they'll eventually be there, particularly when they never say otherwise. You know, if they never say otherwise, then you're hesitant to start another, to plan on something different if they then are there to show up. And of course, I was looking forward to having him on the program and talking about a lot of things. And something obviously, I think, changed his mind. It might have been some of the people still around Voice of Reason. And let me say here that I was happy to see Voice of Reason come back online. And they just published some of those programs that were, as I said, earlier were not, had not been published yet, but still nothing more from there. You don't know if they're working on something, if they're going to, working on a plan to bring it back. I have no idea, but I do know some of the people who are interested in doing so and who would like to be a part of it, and what they would plan to do, I don't know. But in this case, it, that may be the reason why Dietrich decided not to come on my show. But I do really fault anybody who won't properly communicate when they cancel something. And I don't understand why a person does that. It's the same on a larger scale with what Mike Connor did in failing to send a simple message to someone when he was, when he no longer was doing anything with the site, or to post a message on the site, the VOR site, that, you know, what, that he wasn't going to do anymore or whatever. I mean, shut down is not the way a responsible person behaves. And this seems to be kind of, I was looking at the history of Voice of Reason in preparation for talking to Dietrich. And then I looked even, I made more notes about it this morning to make sure that I was right about what I was going to be saying. But this seems to be kind of a typical of the history, a Voice of Reason history in this kind of behavior. And I just look at behavior like that as, irresponsible, very irresponsible. And maybe it's immature. I don't know what it is. It's, it certainly is not behavior that you would want in someone who you would see as in a leadership position. I mean, and I've talked about leadership. I think we need to talk about leadership, and we need to consider the way that anybody who can get on the internet, I guess, and say and do anything, and that includes me. You know, anybody who's confident enough to get on in, on a radio show and talk, or to get, you know, talk out to the atmosphere there, and people see as they're somewhat impressed by that, or they see as this person, because they're the ones you're hearing, they're the ones who have something to say and are someone to be looked up to, someone to be seen as on a higher level than the rest of us, which we really need to consider. All we need to spend more time considering who people are. And of course, one thing I have to say is that a lot of people are a lot younger than me, and I have given up feeling like I would need to apologize for my age, because I see it as a great asset. When you have had, the more life experience you have had, the more you learn and the more wisdom you attain. And if you're young, you may be very bright, you may be very quick, but you don't, if without life experience, you are still moving from one experience to the next and learning from it. And when I think about, if I would tell you all the projects that I've been involved in and all the things that I've done in my life, you would might be surprised at all that I have engaged in. But I don't particularly want to do that. So you would just see me as someone who just kind of showed up and has been doing this work since about 2007. And you're going by that. But I did a lot of things before that, and I learned a lot. But one thing I never did was to just drop out of things without drop something without saying that I was going to do so. Well, since I was a teenager anyway, when I remember some instances where I was really foolishly did foolish things, but not so much, especially not since I've turned 30 or so. But so let me continue on here that with what I looked at on as to Dietrich, all right, who I have nothing against, but it, you know, Dietrich posted on VNN on February 13th, 2008, that he would be ending his tenure as an admin on VNN Forum. And, I guess it was a surprise. He was, said he was going to leave his work to Barg, and, he was changing status so that he can take point on a live media project that will open next month. And all involved with the project are putting forth much effort so that we may produce a tighter and more professional result than has been seen thus far in white media. And he said that, careers open to talent. Well, what he meant was, I imagine, was that there were openings there at this new project of white media, that if people were talented, they could have a career there, and they should let him know. He signed it, "Warmest regards, Dietrich Mullis." And then a bunch of posters thanked him and wished him well. And he said another few words that aren't too important. And then the earliest show that I could find by Dietrich on VNN, going back to his work at VNN now, Vanguard News Network, is the Free Talk Live of June 29th, 2007, with Bud White and Dietrich. And he was on Free Talk Live again on July 12th. The Australian, Rob Halford, showed up on July 13th. Now, I mentioned him because I think he's the one that went to VOR. And when I first started listening, I thought he was just great. And I always wanted them, I always hoped that he would come back, but he never did. Now, what is it with these people? He said he was taking a leave of absence for health reasons, but he never would come back, and I don't know, maybe he really did have some bad health. So, but he was awfully good, an awfully good host. He could go on and on, excuse me, and never get boring at all. So he, but anyway, I just noticed that. I can see that Mishko Novosel was first mentioned in the notes on these Free Talk Live programs. Excuse me. On August 30th, 2007. So that was some time after Dietrich was doing those programs, but he didn't seem to do them regularly. He did off and on. He did them. I guess he was working in the background at VNN a lot. So there was an impromptu show, it said, with Bud White, Mishko Novosel, and Randy Gray on August 30th, 2007. On December 31st, Mishko Novosel is mentioned again. It took that long to mention him again in the notes. And then, but then he's mentioned as resident VNN bad boy on the program. Then he becomes co-host on Free Talk Live in January 2008. And he's mentioned as a co-host on most of those shows. Well, on January 26th, February 1st and 6th, but then he's not mentioned anymore. And that ties in with, after February 6th, that ties in with the announcement by Dietrich on on February 13th, that he was ending his tenure on VNF. And then they both were working on their new project, the new radio network, which was going to be called Whitelandia. Now, on April 2nd, someone who called himself Centerfire, he might still be there, said there have been a few people on this site who expressed their curiosity about when Radio Free Whitelandia will begin. Well, I just logged onto the site, and it is now up and running. He gave the URL as reasonradionetwork.com. Said tonight should be the first night of official broadcasting with Peter Shank from 7 to 9 p.m. and John DeNugent's show beginning at 9 p.m. And I guess that went off as scheduled. And I think I will skip down. I've got some things written by, quite a few things here written by Dietrich, but I'll continue with my with the program record, and that that the first show on VOR was April 2nd, 2008, and it was Peter Schenck, and Peter continued until September, doing daily shows, you know, Monday through Friday. But in October, a lot of replays were presented. In November, December, Schenck did very few original broadcasts, only one in January, a few in February and March 2009. He seems to have gone weekly at that time, and his last program was March 25th, 2009. So that's as long as he lasted. I don't know exactly what happened there, but, you know, he burned out, or is it burnout? Now, that's the thing, excuse me, I was going to mention in the beginning, that we're always being told that people are suffering from burnout. And now this is where I was talking about my long life experience, and that I, you know, in my experience, and I thought that I had burnout a couple of times, but it wasn't. As I look back and I look at myself now and I look at people who who really have lasting power in what they're doing, when people quit, it's generally not burnout. It's the fact that they either don't want to do what they're doing anymore, or they don't feel successful in doing it. They don't feel like they're getting anywhere. It's not satisfying because you're not as successful maybe as you hope to be. It's your expectations in the beginning, and if what you're doing meets those expectations, then you would be happy. But if not, you can get increasingly discouraged until you just give up and say, I don't want to do this anymore, or I can't do it anymore. But, and then you call it burnout, but it's not burnout. I guess you can define burnout how you want, but I generally think it's somebody's working too much. And that's generally how people put it. Oh, this person just worked themselves until they're burned out. And very seldom. I remember Mike Connor telling me that, Mark Weber, he quit his first stint at VOR after six or seven programs. I forget exactly. Maybe it was eight. Because he burned out. Well, how can you burn out after that many programs? But that's what Mike said, because he was, writing every one of them out, you know, word for word. Mike was advising me not to do that. Writing them out, doing them too much word for word. And that was so much work. It took him a couple days a week to do his prepare his program, and then he couldn't keep it up. And Mike called that burnout. Well, I wouldn't call it that. So what I would say is that let me find my place again. I'm sorry. My throat's bothering me. Come back to where I was, that I went ahead with, Peter Schenck. Okay. On April 28th, after, like I say, the first show was April 2nd, 2008. On April 28th, Dietrich wrote, not a day, he was writing just some little posts to the listeners. Not a day goes by, and the supporters, that I'm not humbled by the support we get at VOR. You would think that people coming forward to support you makes things a bit more relaxed, but it's just the opposite. You want to dig in and show them that their investment in your organization is worth it. You know who you are, and we all thank you more than you know. We will continue working, that no support of this project will ever be done in vain. Well, then he says that he's got this new baby, and he's got a lot to do, and he's talking about new host Mark Faust, and someone named Glenn Albrecht he talks about, and Mishko is back from Croatia at his home in Southern California, and that he was on the Friday show with Faust and Bud White. I guess he means the Friday show on VOR, because they had a Friday show, and Dietrich started it and then had different people on it. And at some point, Mischko and Dietrich really teamed up and were working as a team. I thought they were working as a team on VNN, but I didn't see any evidence of that in the program notes. However, it could be just that it wasn't mentioned, or I didn't have time to look at everything that's there. But on August 3rd, now we were in April, now we're in August, Dietrich writes again, and he says, here's some interesting information. He says, around the same time Mischko and I were cooking up the idea for VOR, a small group of activists decided that they wanted to make monthly payments into a central pool and would decide to do activist projects as they came along. They called themselves the Special Projects Unit, or SPU. Luckily for us, we came along and they stepped in as our financial backbone. With their money, we were able to buy all the software and services needed to get this thing off the ground, not to mention the three servers it takes to run the operation. Indeed, they happily sent me money for 3 months before I was even able to show them something, all without ever doubting my honesty or intentions. That kind of trust inspires and motivates me. Well, I don't know, we don't know how much money this amounted to, but there was also talk on VNN that an angel came along in close to the beginning and gave $20,000, donated $20,000. Now, I don't know where $20,000 would have gone in that organization or what in the world they did with it, but it may be that this person promised up to that much or something like that, but had to be, you know, everything had to be accounted for, and they never actually gave that much money. again, it would require Dietrich coming on and answering these questions if he wanted to answer them. I wasn't going to make him say anything he didn't want to say, and I told him that in the front, because I know some of it is kind of sensitive. But since he didn't come on under those auspices, now I am here coming out with the best I can figure out, and some of it may be wrong. So that's what happens when you aren't going to speak up for yourself, particularly after you said you would. So I am, Dietrich goes on to say that he's sad to see this group, this SPU group, fold up. And he said, I cannot help but believe I could have done more to keep them abreast of what we were doing, what our plans were, in order to keep them motivated, and knowing that they're an integral part of what we're trying to accomplish here at VOR. I would say that this has been an ongoing problem at VOR, even after Dietrich left, that they have never done enough to keep supporters and people involved there motivated and knowing what was going on, or that they were part of it, part of the plan, because it's always been held pretty close, and well, just I never got the feeling that I was really a part of it, and I may have criticized what they were trying to do, but still, I mean, I didn't have the feeling that I had any input. So there is, he says, for myself, it comes down to a failure of leadership and a failure to properly allot the time and resources to the SPU group in order to bring them more into the fold of things. Mischko and I are sad to see them go, but we will never forget what they made possible for us. Well, I think after this, Mischko was the one who was funding, because I know that Mischko put a lot of money into VOR, and it appears that they had some good financial support early on, but maybe they lost it for whatever reason. At least this is what Dietrich is actually saying. Then he says, and this is what we hear. I mean, well, let me just read it. He says, VOR is here to stay, however. I hope I have been clear enough about that. If I have to take another job, we're staying on air. Our people need to be informed, inspired, and incited to take part in the great struggle. And we have far too many plans for the future and far too much growth in listenership to even consider not staying the course. The way we figure, they'll be shutting down the politically incorrect internet within a few years, so it's onward and upward or else. Well, that wasn't too accurate. In fact, the whole thing wasn't too accurate. But in 2008, they were talking about, not only they, but lots of people, were talking about how the internet was going to be shut down. Well, it's only 2013, 5 years later, but the internet has not been shut down, but it's still being said all the time that the internet is going to be shut down. I don't know, you know, we have to ask what the programs at VOR had to do with improving that situation. But that's up to, when I listen to them, what they sound, well, naturally, they sound a little dated because they are dated, and things get dated very quickly in these fast-moving times we're living in. And if they're basically about news stories that are taking place at the time, while they do show what's going on, that makes a program, if you want to go back and listen to archives, even more dated, because that news then, while on one hand it might be interesting to compare, it's not the news that's now, and so it's, you know, it's not as interesting. So I'm just kind of going to make my point again that I make a lot between entertainment and really teaching people things. And it's hard to keep teaching, and you have to have some entertainment, but it can deteriorate into mostly entertainment because listeners like entertainment. They want, and a lot of the VOR listeners that they had brought from people who were VNN listeners and so on, they want to hear certain kind of stuff, and that's what gets them looking forward to it and listening. And it isn't always enlightening or teaching them that much. It can be a lot that is just going over and over the same old stuff. Well, it's hard, you know. It's difficult. I can't tell you, like with today's program, how difficult it is to put on a live program, and fairly often too. If I did 2 hours 5 days a week, I don't know. I would just be grabbing at things, you know, to just talk about. There's no time to plan. There's and then if you have guests, which I like to have. Guests, so and I'm sure I know my listeners like guests. You can have a problem with guests. Sometimes they're very time consuming, and talking to them, getting everything arranged, and particularly on the White Network, they have to call in themselves. And if they're a new guest, which many of our guests still are, they have to be instructed in how to do that. And often they think, oh, I can do that. That's simple. And then they find out that they're doing it wrong, and it's not simple. And so we have a few little problems. It can be very time consuming. If I don't have a guest, or guests might not show as has happened this week. Whereas in the beginning of when I did programs, I never had that problem with guests, but I've been having it a little bit lately. And I don't know if we're in some funny times right now, we're under stress, or maybe we're under some kind of planetary configuration that is causing mix-ups or confusion. It's very possible. I don't know, because I don't keep up with that kind of thing anymore. But going on with what Dietrich wrote here in this informative little post he made, every cloud has a silver lining, and ours is this. We can now accept Visa, MasterCard, debit cards through PayPal. No more snail mail. He said, you can use the support VOR link up top, and I will experiment with where to put it on the front page so that it is as inobtrusive as possible. Thanks for reading. So at that time, they didn't want to act like they were looking for donations. He wanted to make the support VOR link with the donate sign, I guess, inobtrusive. And Mike was Mike was that way too. Even after Mishko was asking him to make it stand out and get people donating because he was tired of paying the bills, Mike didn't seem to want to do that, and it wasn't until after Mishko left that he did it. And that was a sore point with Mishko. So, you know, I know it sounds like I'm gossiping, I guess, but I am in a sense, but I'm also just putting out some things about the way it was and the way it is that might help us to improve what we do and improve our situation, because so much of it is communication. And some people who are kind of these people, and I don't mean to point a finger or say I know anything about people's personalities, because I think Mishko is a great guy and I have nothing against Dietrich either. But maybe people like Mishko and Dietrich, and more back then too, who have or take on this very casual attitude, well, we're just a bunch of protesters here. We're just a bunch of, you know, of white guys who are angry, and, you know, we're not very professional. If they take on that way, that manner of being, and then that manner of speaking and speaking with one another, and even speaking on the air, it can end up being a lack of being able to communicate properly, you know, and in clear terms, so that you can become professional without becoming stuffy, or, you know, they don't want to be stuffy. They want to be, you know, young. They want to sound young. They want to talk like the young people talk. But, you know, that's just not something that I really relate to, being I'm not young and I don't yearn to be young. Because I see how far I've come and I don't want to go back. So this is just this for whatever this is worth. Now, I will continue on here. I won't drag that out. October 3rd, 2008. All right. This week in Disorganized America with Mishko and Dietrich seems like it began on October 3rd, 2008. Before that, they had various shows on Friday with different hosts and so on. But, and it wasn't always called that, but I've got the program notes here. Oh yeah, I know why I mentioned this. That was Dietrich and Mishko, and they're doing this show together. Then in January 2009, so we moved finally out of 2008, which is the year that VOR began in April. And now in January 2009, it's not a year old yet. Mike Connor is there. I listened to part of these programs, but I didn't listen to it all. But the first time I saw his name, and said that he was on with Mishko, on that, This Week in Disorganized America. And, Mishko said on the air that he called Mike our buddy who's helping us out. So Mike was on board at that time, but he wasn't a principal, participant, but he was helping out. And I think that is how Mike said he started. He came along. He was willing to help out, and he was good help, knowing, you know, he had to have been good help. And so he remained and he continued, and he was on a few more of the shows actually speaking. Mike Connor was, from March to May 21st, Dietrich was absent, and Mike was on sometimes. I started at VOR on March 1st. 2010. So I moved already into 2010 here somehow. I was just going through this is actually going through Dietrich's presence and absences. So, from March 5th to May 21st, 2010, Dietrich was absent. And, that's why I don't remember him being on that much. I didn't listen to those shows at all regularly, but I heard a few of them. And, but, you know, he wasn't hardly there after I started, although, I wasn't listening to it then either too much. But Dietrich returned on June 4th, and he stayed on, he was there on the program on the 11th, the 18th, the 25th of June, and then January 9th, 2010, then he was gone for good. So his last show was January 7th, 9th, July 9th. So his last show was July 9th, 2010. And so if he started up the network in April 2nd, 2008, in about 2 years, and he was absent part of that time, but not so much until the end, then he was gone. So that was a 2 year stint, for Dietrich, not knowing, I don't know all the reasons, but it was put out as personal reasons, and probably so. He had a lot of personal things going on at that time. So, and the last week in Disorganized America was on December 17th, 2012. And I remember that very well, because that's when Mike Connor disappeared, the first time that I knew of, and Mischko left at that time too, after that he got so fed up, and I talked about that before. So then Mike came back and everything got going again, but Mischko was gone. So that was by December, 2012, after starting out together in, 2008, both of them were gone, although now they may be coming back together to get it going again. I don't know. John DeNugent was another one who didn't last very long. So, while you don't expect all programs to go on and on forever, that's not too much. That's really not even very realistic, because you can get kind of set in your ways, or kind of stale, or kind of tired, and sometimes you need new things. But I've got 15 minutes left in this part. I don't want to drag this out. I'll just say what little more I have, and that is, I wanted to ask Dietrich how he became a racialist, and just what were his real beliefs, and where did he stand? Because there has, sometimes it's a little, not very clear. And there was an email that he wrote, not a comment that he wrote on a place called BuzzFeed that, is interesting to me, because, he said, somebody's come on the air, but he needs to turn down everything because I can hear the sound of it. I can hear the background sound. So he needs to turn off his sound for now. Kind of noisy. You're welcome. The person that's on is welcome, but they have, there you go. That's good. All right. I don't want him to hang up. Don't hang up. He says, I think that Dietrich is a libertarian. See, I wanted to ask him about that. He wrote this comment to something that was about, I don't want to read it all. So, empty rhetoric and, you know, extreme right wingers. Well, it's more about the left and the right and which way to go, and Dietrich is saying that both sides, I'll just do the ending here, of course, both sides of the invalid left-right scheme have their totalitarian streak. Like Alex, I'm just saying this, like Alex Linder, it seems that Dietrich, who called Alex his mentor just recently on BNN, when he made a couple of comments, a couple of posts, he called Alex his mentor. From back when. And so Dietrich is saying, and this is the date of this is, well, I should have it. I should have it, I think. I think it was about 3 years ago. He says, that is why I believe a more useful way of thinking about politics as a spectrum is one that runs between those who like more governmental control and those who like less. So you would have Obama, Bush, socialists, moralists, and military adventurers on one side, and people who want to be private citizens, work hard, raise their kids or whatever, and have government and moralists leave them the hell alone on the other side. So I take it that Dietrich feels that he's on the side of less government and people leaving everybody alone, which is which like so many others is not National Socialist at all. It's kind of questionable if it's nationalist. You know, how do you do nationalism when you don't have a government and you don't have people, you know, people telling you what's what and what's going to be going on? Because in a real nationalist state or nation, everybody is together in certain beliefs and mores and how things are done. They're not all these individualists like libertarians want things to be. And libertarians want as much liberty as possible and as little government as possible. So this I think this is worth speaking about because we have this argument or this question is a real basic question in our so-called, well, for white people to decide where they stand on this. A lot of people are not confused. They're just saying a lot of things that they believe that don't necessarily fit together. You know, it's not going to fit together. And so this is an ongoing discussion that we think we should be having amongst white folks here on the White Network. And we're open to discussion about it, but we want to discuss these kind of important things more than we want to entertain our listeners and reach people who are kind of lukewarm or not even lukewarm, and try to bring them into a fold through some kind of interesting content or whatever, so they will get more serious about it. Or we're really talking to the serious people and trying to get clear so that we can come from a more unified place where we all understand what's at stake, what are the options, what are the real possibilities, and how do we get there? Because some of us don't see that libertarianism can ever get us to where we think we want to go as a racialist, a white racialist community. And I wasn't going to bring Alex Linder into this at all, and I'm not trying here to, but you know, I suppose he doesn't mind getting attention. So I don't mean that negatively. I mean he probably doesn't mind me saying this. So or talking about him. But you know, Alex has come up with this kind of not very well thought out, just an idea that we could have this government that is totally firm and in total control and charge of military and our racial policy. You know, only whites only, nobody else. But other than that, we can have all this libertarian freedom in our society because white people are responsible enough and capable enough and intelligent enough to carry that out without a problem. But you know, in the first place, he's wrong about the abilities of whites, because we need to recognize that that there's a whole spectrum of intelligence and capability among white people, and when we have a white nation, we're going to have to rein in. We're going to have to control a lot of white people from doing whatever they want to do, because they're not allowed to just do whatever they want to do. So that's another issue. I won't go into that now. I'm going to end here. by talking about a new video by Anthony Lawson, because I think it applies. It applies for me to justify what I've been saying in this hour. I got an email from Anthony Lawson this morning. I'm not the only one. I mean, it's a general email he sent out to whoever is on his list, that he announcing a new video, and I watched it. It's called American Democracy - The Funeral. It's very good, and I recommend you go to YouTube and look at it. He always, everything he does is has a strong impact. That's, he's very good at that, and it's because he feels it and believes it. This one features the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte, just over, and the mayor of Los Angeles, whose name I can't exactly say right at the moment because it's not in front of me, Riadoso or something like that, the Hispanic mayor of Los Angeles, who gave a talk, and the things. Oh, he's the one who did that vote. Yeah, he emceed or was over that vote that they took about Jerusalem becoming the capital of Israel, whether the party would take a stand on that and say, yes, the Democratic Party was for the idea of Israel having total control over Jerusalem as their capital. And, of course, they would allow, make it a free city for all religions to partake in. Sure, sure they will. Anyway, Anthony Lawson said in his email that he was compelled to put this video together. And so he did it. I mean, he probably did it kind of fast. But I like that because that's exactly how I was feeling when I read it, that I felt I was compelled to talk about this, what I'm talking about this morning, on this program. You know, As I said, I considered just setting it aside and maybe making a few comments and leaving it at that. But I just felt like I didn't want to do that. I couldn't do that. I wanted to talk about it and talk about the things that I have been that I have talked about. And I usually am not sorry that I do that when I do it. Now, I've got August Hurst on the line. And since I've finished with what I was saying, and I'm going to go next hour into circumcision. I am going to talk about that. It's something I think is very important. I'm going to tell you why I think it's very important. But first, I'm going to ask, I wonder if he's still, he needs to turn on again. There you go. Okay, you have to turn way down because I hear myself. Are you not wearing a headset?
I am wearing a headset.
Oh.
Let me see if I can adjust the volume.
Yeah.
How is that? Is that better?
Well, not too much, but we'll make do as long as I don't hear my own voice coming back at me. This is, it's pretty loud. I don't know what all that static is. But this is, ladies and gentlemen, this is our new radio host, August Hurst, and I wanted to have a little chat with him about his upcoming program. I wanted to allow him to say it, but maybe it's a good thing I got him on here early to find out if we're going to be able to do this or not. I don't know what the problem is exactly. But how about you just, it's not too bad right now, August. How about you just saying a few words about yourself and your program?
Well, certainly. My name is August Hurst. I've got an academic background in philosophy and history and biology and general science. And I've been exploring history in general and German history in particular since 1998. I took a specified course in history of the German lands. And since then I've been reading increasingly a large number of revisionist authors and developed my own particular interest in the past 4 years. And much of that has led to an interest in eventually wanting to do some kind of podcast or radio program, so I'm very pleased to be able to do this. And the name of my show is An Hour by the Window. And what I plan to do on this particular podcast is discuss issues such as the actual and perceived origins of World War II. There are quite a few misconceptions about motives and causality in that war, and I want to explore that. Also, propaganda related to the war and how that's fed misconceptions, fueled policies, anti-white viewpoints. I would like to explore questions of relevance of differing political systems for whites. There's a good bit of debate out there about which system best represents our racial interests. So I'd like to explore that as well. And yeah. Of course, of late, there's been a lot of hot debate about the necessity or lack thereof of revisionism. And that's something I would like to address as well. I think it's a strong corrective, not just to German history and for people of German descent, but also as a corrective on anti-white views in general. I don't think that we can escape from the necessity of revisionism, not just as a search for truth, historical truth, but also because much that underlies the kosher history of, that has been spoon-fed to us is an anti-white in general, not just anti-German.
Okay, well, August, we're gonna keep you on. We'll talk with you again after the break. We're headed for our 5-minute musical interlude, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be back after that with August Hurst. So stay tuned.
Well, how do you do, young Willie McBride? Do you mind if I sit here down by your graveside and rest for a while? Need the warm summer sun. I've been walking all day and I'm nearly done. I see by your gravestone you are only 19 when you joined the Great Fallen in 1916. I hope you died well and I hope you died clean. Our young Willie McBride was it slow and obscene. Did he beat the drum slowly? Did he play the fife slowly? Did they sound the death march as they lowered you down? And did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? Did you leave it a wife or a sweetheart behind? In some faithful heart is your memory enshrined. Although you died back in 1916, in that faithful heart are you forever 19? Or are you a stranger without even a name, enclosed and forever behind the glass frame? In an old photograph torn, battered and stained, and faded to yellow in the brown leather frame. Did he beat the drum slowly? Did he play the fife slowly? Did I sound the death march as they lowered you down? Did the band play the last post and chorus? And did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? The sun, now it shines on the green fields of France. There's a warm summer breeze, it makes the red poppies dance. And look how the sun shines from under the clouds. us. There's no gas, no barbed wire, there's no gun firing now. But here in this graveyard, it's still no man's land. The countless white crosses stand mute in the sand. To man's blind indifference, to his fellow man, to all generation that were butchered and damned. Did he beat the drum slowly? Did he play the fife slowly? Did they sound the death march as he lowered you down? And did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the fall? A young Willie, my bride, I can't help wonder why. To those that lie here, know why did they die? And did they believe when they answered the call? Did they really believe that this war would end wars? Well, the sorrow, the suffering, the glory, the pain, the killing and dying were all done in vain. For young Willie McBride, it all happened again, and again, and again, and again, and again. Did they beat the drums?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager with Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn, and I introduced our new radio host at the end of the last hour before the break, and he's still here with us, and now he's got everything quieted down. Very nice. And in fact, August, while you were talking, we didn't have that noise, and I don't even hear it now while I'm talking, so that's good. Good for you.
I have a ceiling fan on that I turned off, so hopefully that helped.
Yeah, well, there's something, I don't know, I know it's not going to occur on your program, because you're going to start out with pre-recorded shows, right?
That's correct.
Yes. And once again, for those who maybe are just tuning in to the second half, this is August Hurst. He is starting a new program on the White Network on Wednesday at 9 Eastern Time, and it's called An Hour by the Window, and he's a person with an academic background. He's a committed and dedicated person to his views, and so therefore we're really excited, and we believe this is going to be a very good show and popular, and I know our listeners are happy to have a new program here, and we hope this will encourage more people to come forth and do what it takes, and it's not easy. Do all the work necessary to try to start a show and then stick with it. So what else? I don't want to say. I know that being in the being out there in the world and earning a living and so on, you can't say. And I don't want to say anything that you wouldn't want to say. But is there anything more that did you want to talk about your blogs? Did you mention those yet?
Absolutely. I actually maintain two blogs. One is a bit more serious than the other. The first one that I mentioned, will at least be mentioned on my description, is National Socialist Resources. And the URL on that is nsarchives.blogspot.com. And the other one is a kind of general interest, less serious, less focused. It's called The Hidden and the Visible. And that is worldswomb.blogspot.com.
Okay, WORLDSWOMB, World's Womb.
That is correct.
Very interesting. Now, I've been to your to the first one you mentioned and read quite a bit on it. I like it very much. I hadn't been to the other one yet.
Yeah, and if you go to if you click on my username on my blog, my National Socialist blog, you'll get the link to the other one as well. And also the blogs that I follow are listed on there, too, and a few of them are very informative, very useful.
Okay. Well, Have you always tended toward the way that you think now, or are you one of those people that made a big shift, or was it just a gradual thing, or what?
I would say that it was probably very gradual. My upbringing, my father was a tire salesman by trade. My mother was a beautician, and I had more or less equal influence from both. My father was certainly racialist, although he didn't talk about his views a lot. I would get inklings of his ideas from time to time, but he wasn't very explicit in talking about his ideas. He was a member of the Ku Klux Klan, as was my grandfather. But I never got a heavy dose of those views from him directly. I don't know if he maybe thought that I would frown upon them, or what his motivation was, but I didn't get a strong influence from him. It really came from my own learning and my own experiences over time.
Even though he was a member of the Ku Klux Klan, you said?
That is correct.
Uh-huh.
He never really never spoke in a lot of detail with me about it. Made some passing references to it. I wouldn't call him an active member. I don't know the extent of his involvement. Mm-hmm. I just know that he was a member, as was my grandfather. And it was never a direct influence. All my ideas more or less came from my own experiences and also my education. And I remember at one point during my undergraduate education how it struck me that there was such an emphasis on diversity and higher education, and diversity is some kind of intrinsic value. And it struck me that while we seem to, as a culture, put such value within the presence of other groups in our own societies, there wasn't much of an explicit concern, and if not outright hostility, toward our own people. And I always thought that was hypocritical, and over time it fed into a much stronger worldview that I have today, and because I see it as the highest issue of importance, preserving our own kind. I've come to believe that the world is a conflict among various biological types, and that we have, for lack of a better term, we've been deceived. And that was a perspective I adopted during my education. And I eventually realized that I was a National Socialist, and past 4 years, I explicitly so, and I've been engaged in a variety of online fora, and really have only had this blog for about a year. But I would have to say that this is a gradual process. It didn't occur in decisive, quick-paced steps. It was very gradual.
Mm-hmm. Well,
at
that's
one point
probably
in time, I would have probably have called myself something like a paleoconservative, racially aware paleoconservative, and then veered away from that. And that was an easy step to make.
Well, that's probably a good way for it to happen, although I can't say that one way is better than another. But people who gradually grow into this is probably nice and solid. Now, you say that you're of Germanic descent. And, you know, I grew up in a family of Germans, and it was my grandparents who actually came to the United States. So they were the real Germans, and then my parents we had a lot of German tradition and a lot of German, a whole group of German people that were all friends together. So they had a club, and we did all that stuff. So I got a lot of that, and yet my parents and my relatives either, nobody ever tried to make me believe anything, and they didn't say that much. You know, I wish that they had talked to me more about things. I wish they had given me more of their thoughts, and I wish that that I had asked them more about it than I did. Often when I asked, I was kind of put off by my mother, and I finally had some nice conversations with my one grandmother who lived into her 80s, so I learned some things from her. But I was old enough then that, you know, I mean, when I was younger, it didn't occur to me that I needed to know any of these things. So I wonder if you feel that your family was German enough, and that they didn't push anything on you, and if that is maybe typical of Germans, because I tend to think it is, that German people, as parents, don't try to force their children into. They're not the way they're perceived, you know, to be as like some kind of, you know, have these strong beliefs or whatever, and try to, like people imagine of the Nazis, you know, that they're, or Germans in general, that they're just so they indoctrinate one another. It's not true at all.
Well, actually, on my mother's side, she, her family is mostly English descent, and there is some Dutch and my ancestry on that side as well. My father's side has German blood, but I never got a strong sense from either of them with regard to issues like ethnicity or race. I've intimated my father made some sort of covert remarks here and there about race, ethnicity, but it was never pushed on me. My mother was liberal, maybe left of center on her world perspective, and my father was conservative. But I never got, you mentioned how you would have benefited perhaps from an earlier grounding and concerns with race, and I certainly feel the same way. I feel that I would have been much further along in many of my endeavors and interests and skills had I been in had some sort of grounding and concerns with race and ethnicity early on in my life. I wish that had been the case, but it wasn't. My father and I, we just didn't talk about things like that. And it's not that I would have been averse to it, or if perhaps he thought that I would have been judgmental. Certainly wasn't the case, because I was very open-minded growing up.
So was I. And, you know, my whole family, you know, we could talk about anything. I mean, and I did hear a lot of things, but I just, if it was just in passing, you know, I just let it pass by. But, I mean, I grew up in a real open, with a lot of freedom for myself to think what I thought and develop my own ideas. And, yeah, I do think I would have benefited from a little more guidance. But, you know, yeah. I think that, like, my parents were first-generation Americans, and their whole idea was to be an American, you know, and all these people right. came then. That's what, if the good ones, you know, they weren't trying to keep their parents, their children, acting like Germans or something. You know, they didn't want to do that. They wouldn't do that to us out of our own best interest. They just wanted us to be able to fit in. And so that's, you know, I believe I lost out on a lot, though, that I could have gained a lot of family history. And, well, it was hard to get any family history, actually. But I, you know, just a lot of whatever. Maybe there wasn't anything. Maybe there wasn't anything to get. But,
you know, my past being what it was, I can't say that I regret it on the whole, because I'm glad that I found my own way in life and my own views based on my own exploration and based on my own experiences to some degree. Now, I think I would have certainly benefited from a much firmer grounding and concerns with race early on, but on the other side of the coin, I'm glad that I sort of found my own way, and as I remarked to a youngster wants to wake up at some point, even if it's late in the game, is better than never waking up at all. And
Think it's possible that if you get to get guidance from your parents, you reject it. In fact, I was one who, not that I loved my parents and I thought highly of them, but I wasn't very open to a lot of the advice they wanted to give me, which was always about, you know, things like my mother wanting me to prepare to be a secretary. And, well, something to fall back on, she said. I said, I don't want to fall back on being a secretary. And, you know, my father also giving me kind of advice to be more practical and, you know, things that I just didn't want. So I wasn't very good at listening to them. And if they had talked about those things, I may have had gotten
developed an aversion to it.
Yeah, right. And, and you're right. When you discover it all on your own, it means a lot, and you know, well, it just you don't have any reason to reject it,
right?
Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. I'm not reacting against anything necessarily that my parents instilled in me. I'm not haven't formed anything on the basis of in that regard, that specific respect, on the basis of what they've imparted to me, and so it makes me proud. And I feel very strong in my views and very aware and privileged, even if I'm in my 30s and I wasn't this awake early in my life. I'm privileged to, at least at this point, be so aware and concerned and have a strong sense of direction. So.
Well, I think we're privileged to have you on this network because you are young and yet you're very serious and committed, and that's just great. And obviously you can do the work. You already have been doing it. So would you like to give a little preview of what your first show is going to be on Wednesday?
Absolutely, Carolyn. My first show this Wednesday is going to feature the topic of, it's something I've been reading extensively about, and someone in one of the channels that I talk in has commented, this is my pet project for some time now, is the origins of the Second World War and misconceptions about causality in those origins. And that's what I anticipate is going to be the first half of the show, and the remaining half is going to be focused on how propaganda about the origins of the Second World War has fed into anti-white policies and viewpoints in the present.
All right. I'm just checking.
Or should say from the Second World War on to the present.
I'm just checking here for some... I've got all kinds of messages here. Let's see if... I've even heard from... Dietrich, I'm almost afraid to open them now. Ian V. McDonald, let me see if there's any questions for you or anything. No, that's not one. That's not either. All right, well, I'm looking forward to that, and I thank you, August, for coming on today, and it worked out real well. And
thank you and Tan for the opportunity.
Well, yes, and there are opportunities here for people who are committed to doing the show and keeping up with it. So we just invite people to think about it and talk to us about it. All right. Well, thanks very much, August, and we'll be talking to you.
I do want to say real quick that if people do have questions, they can email me at worldswomb, like my blog, worldswomb@gmail.com, if they have a question or comment.
Very good. That's very good.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Thank you, August. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to open this email and see what it says. Oh, well, we've got a misunderstanding here because of my, with Dietrich, because of my email. I wrote him an email from Gmail telling him that I was not receiving emails from, let's see what he says about that one. Well, I told him though, I sent him another email from Gmail, and I included what I had sent in the other one, and I sent him a second email from Gmail, which certainly got to him, and he could answer me there, but he didn't. He's just sticking with this one, which was down for a day, and so whatever came at that time didn't come in, but he says, I'm still around. So let's see if he will. I don't think he can call in because we're not set up for it. Well, hopefully, ladies and gentlemen, we get these things. I don't know if this is what to make of this, because we'll get this straightened out, and maybe he'll be on another time, and we can iron all these things out and get the dope straight from Dietrich. I'm glad he was willing to come on, because I just could not understand why he didn't reply. But the email thing is not a very good reason, because I did write to him from another email account, which certainly works very well, and there were no answers in that one. So I guess I don't know. I don't want to spend any more time talking about what I want to do is that I have to go to I've lost my SkyCon page. And I have to go back to that page, and so I have to bring it up in a new tab here. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. I should have had kept August on, let him keep talking while I do this, but it really only will take a minute, less than a minute to bring this up again. So while I'm doing that, I'm not very good at talking and doing things at the same time. So this should be here now. Okay, we're all set again. I'm going to talk about circumcision in the last 40 minutes. And if it is at all possible for Dietrich to call in to the White Network and get on the air with me, if he can call in to the White Network, because I did send him the instructions on how to do it. And if he does it and I see that a call has come in from him, I will, I will have this up here. I can get to this page and I can allow his call in. So he is welcome to call in if he ever made contact with the White Network. All he has to do is go on Skype to the White Network and make a contact, but I don't, and somebody might answer it for him. So we still could maybe have a discussion with Dietrich if he can do all that. I'm more than willing. So in the meantime, I will discuss here about circumcision. I'm going to start. I believe that this issue about circumcision is gaining ground by a number of people, and it's an issue that we should persevere as a race. We should persevere in this to educate our people why they should not circumcise their baby boys. And circumcision is something that the Jews want. They can have it, you know. I don't care. They can have it, but it is not, they want it. They want everybody to do it. They do. They don't want speaking about the circumcision ban, I don't think that, of course, if we were true white people, we wouldn't be banning circumcision for Jews or for Arabs or for any other people. We would let them do what they wanted. We would ban circumcision for white boys, white baby boys, and white people to do. That's what we would do. And here's where this government business comes in. If you're going to have a weak government, you can't do much of anything. But in a strong white national government, there would be a ban on circumcision, in my opinion. Okay, here he comes. Let me try to get him on here. Wait a minute. I'm doing it wrong. Hang on there. Don't hang up, Dietrich. 9271. Okay, he's here. Hi, Dietrich.
Hi, Carolyn. How you doing?
Well, very nice of you to still come on. I'm very glad that you're here. This is just great. We've still got over a half hour, and so we can go over these things. I'll get this page of mine back up. I'll leave the circumcision till later. And, all right, have you been listening from the beginning of the show?
Yeah, I was here. I sent you guys a message at 1:20, your instructions were to be on at 1:30, and I had my three kids down for a nap, and was ready to go at about 1:20, and I've been sitting around.
Well, I don't know exactly what you sent to who, but I didn't have any.
I sent a Skype friend request to the White Network, which is the same thing I just called now. Usually you can't call, and you should probably set up to where you can't call. Unless you're on their friends list, because then you'll get all kinds of interruptions and distractions when you're doing a show. But that's neither here nor now. I mailed you several times. I have a new baby, and I think between going out and taking care of a business on that end, with me. I told you I would. I asked you if you would give me an update on Wednesday because I just had a new baby born, and
I know you did, and I did, and then I sent it. I sent it from CarolynYeager.com, and then I found that my email had been moved from one server to another, and I wasn't getting any incoming. They were outgoing, but there was no incoming. And
I sent you an email back answering all your questions and saying, "Okay, I'll see you."
Yeah, but then I sent you. So I went over to my Gmail account and I sent you. I don't. We shouldn't be arguing with this, but I sent you an email on Wednesday. Early in the day from Gmail.
Past hour. not being there and being Slack and whatnot, I just asked you to give me a heads up on Wednesday with all your details, and I confirmed and answered your questions and said I'll see you at 1:30 on Saturday. I'm here, I was here at before 1:30 on Saturday. And
but I didn't get anything from
to
you.
Do so. Well, I know, but that's your fault. Do you understand?
Yeah, but no, but as I told you, I sent it from Gmail, and I told you that the other one, I couldn't get into that one, so we needed to communicate on this account. And I don't think you opened that up.
I have a baby with a heart.
Okay.
Murmur.
All right. So that's just to. Oh, I'm sorry about that. That's just to clarify that I did not get anything back from you.
Well,
even though you said you sent it, but you sent it to at the wrong, you know,
lost. The takeaway from this might be to not badmouth people when. You know, because something.
Well,
might be-
I did write you again. I wrote you three times from Gmail and never got a response.
Right, I haven't been around since Wednesday.
Okay, well that's
but
it.
I said on Wednesday I'll see you then.
Yeah.
And
well,
I was ready to see you then.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's it. So it was totally screwed up. But you can understand that. You know, I would think you would look at your email prior. But anyway, let's go on. Let's go on from here. I understand what happened. So what would you like to say about, let me get this down. What would you like to say about what I was saying, or what would you like to correct or clarify? Or,
well, I'd be lying if I said I didn't make some notes. I'm a little bit of a note taker.
Okay.
But, you should see my books. I believe in writing them. But, gosh, where to begin? We're going back so far now. The BuzzFeed comment was 3 years ago. You were struggling for the date on that. That was about.
Yeah, I did say 3 years. Finally, I had that written down.
And you have to understand the audience of who BuzzFeed is. I do come from a libertarian small L type point of view. There isn't much of a mistake in that. But you know, in one paragraph, you can't nuance that, especially considering the audience. But it's. To be sure, it's in the context of protecting our people. That's a non-negotiable. It's a non-starter. I don't think people should have the right to, you know, hire illegals and destroy the blood bases of a nation. But once that type of thing is established, I think leaving people the heck alone is a great idea.
Okay, Once that aside, well, what is your position then? What is your political position? And are you sympathetic with libertarianism, or in what way, or what do you see as the ideal nation?
I'm sympathetic to all of my people. I guess in a way, that's a really bad answer, I suppose, but I can see where all of them are coming from, you know, and maybe that's sort of the, I don't know. I wanted to be a politician at one point. Maybe that's kind of the politician in me, is that I can see why or how, or at least I think I can see how people arrived at some sort of point of view. I can see great things about National Socialism, or even authoritarianism, or a monarchy, or a complete radical anarchy, anarcho-syndicalism, libertarianism. But I generally come from a thing where, you know, I like the Platonic idea of politics is personage writ large. We should treat other nations like we treat our neighbors. We should leave them the hell alone. We should not let their kids invade our house and open their fridge unless they're invited, and then they should go the hell home. You know, just, it's easy stuff. I don't think any of this stuff is real complex, but there's a blood basis to nations, just like there's a blood basis to the word nation. The root nation sharing the Latin root is the word natal, as in neonatal or whatever. It's a blood, it's a birth type of note. And without that, you can't have freedom. And I think the United States is a great example of that. Multiculturalism, you have nothing in common anymore. You have to have these armor-clad police guys spraying pepper spray. If you had more freedom, as I like to say, Northern California could have its all-lesbian Senate, and people in South Carolina could require an ID before they voted. It's a nice notion in the type of messed up situation we're in right now. But to talk about politics at this late date is sort of like, step 423,000, and we're on step two. So I kind of see it as a kind of a circle jerk. It's kind of a waste of time. Not a pure waste of time. I think it's a philosophical exercise. I think we have to get rid of this thing we have now and replace it with something less stupid.
Well, I had a list of questions to ask you, and I was looking for them, but I guess they got lost too. So I don't really need them.
The baby's up, I have to bolt. You've got me until 4 as per our agreement, and I can go along until the babies wake up. Now, when the babies wake up, they're going to run downstairs and tackle me, so then I'll have to pull.
Well, they won't. Will they wake up before the end of this show, and before a half hour?
Dude, they're handled. They're handled until 4.
Okay, great. Well, that's as long as we can go anyway, because our show just automatically ends at that time. So, all right. So, are you going to? I'll just jump right into it. Do you have any consideration at all of coming back to VOR and trying to bring VOR back and run it again?
Run it again. That's probably not run it again. I'm trying to find a happy medium. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. I've had people contacting me, and there's a range of options. There are a range of options at hand, going from VOR light or even lighter than light, as in, just keeping VOR, keeping the archives up and shuttering it otherwise, and keeping it up as an archive, like American Dissident Voices or something. Should we be so bold to compare ourselves with that? And above that, you have something I've talked to other people about and called it VOR light, which is, we can do just like some podcasting things, or we can syndicate other podcasts, and we could be a central clearinghouse for content that we think is good and that we think is worthwhile. We'll have the every now and then essays and whatnot, kind of VOR light, all the way back to where we were and beyond, live broadcasts, new host recruiting, etc. But that's going to take interested and talented people coming forward, and I'd have to I hadn't really examined the term burnout before you had mentioned it halfway through the first hour, and I think you seem to come down on the side that it was not relevant or there wasn't like a real thing, and I really don't know how to take that. When I started VOR, I was a student. I had my wife just had our first child, and she had some undiagnosed, not chronic problems, but problems that went undiagnosed for months and months and months. And I was getting about 3 or 4 hours of sleep. I was going to school, and that I mentioned, I was working full time. So, and as I think you figured out since at least the time you started the White Network, there's a lot more here than meets the eye, right? I mean, there's a lot more than people think. Do you not agree? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, I don't know if it's more than they think, but there's a lot to do. And of course, in my case, in the White Network's case, Tan Stoffel does that part of the work. And that's the part that you were doing, I guess, at VOR, right? You were doing all the technical.
Yes. As far as
management
going, by the time we got going, and that's why there was, and I think for a software project of this size, it's not that bad to have a 6-month project go 3 weeks long, and that's all we did. We went 3 weeks long, and that was in the midst of, actually, we went live the week after I took exams for the spring semester. So that wasn't too bad. Or maybe it was the week before. I don't know, it was 2008. So hard to say at that point. But
You were very ambitious. Then if you were a student, you were a young husband, you were a father, and you were still working part-time, and you undertook to do all this.
Full time.
And working. Why then did you undertake with Mishko to start a brand new radio network at that time when you were?
Because Mark is annoying as hell, and I got tired of him calling me twice a day and begging me to do it, and then getting mad at me when I respectfully said, you know, I decline. I just don't have the time. And he was just getting mad at me, and just like,
you're talking about Mark Novosel.
Yeah, my.
Not Mark Faust or some other Mark.
Or Mishko.
Yeah.
And so everybody basically knows he's an SOB. But
okay, you're joking, right? I mean, you guys talk like that to each other.
Yeah, we.
How serious are you when you talk like that to each other?
Well, I'm not. I don't know that his mother is a bitch, but I don't know how else you get a kid like that. I don't know. Okay, drop it. He is a very good salesman, and I'm the type of person that doesn't react well to a lot of pressure. So I sort of caved, and you know, he's made it up to me, and then intervening years with friendship, with his moral support in the years. I mean, I don't hesitate to say I've been through hell and back. And anyone who knows, I don't really want to get into it as much, but I had a really tough divorce, and that had a lot to do with my absence from VOR. And it was, my political beliefs were used against me. They tried to take my children away from me.
That's what was being said, and that's what I fully believed. You know, at the time,
and it was kind of weird because, you know, I'm not even sure 100% what my political beliefs are, and yet they're being used in court to try to take my kids away from me. I thought the whole thing was just silly, and luckily enough, my lawyer did too, so we were good there. But basically, Mark Mishko Novosel applied a bunch of arm twisting to me, and we said okay. And then I was just sort of – it was just sort of one step in front of the other. And I used it as a training ground to do a lot of stuff. You know, because us technical guys, we like taking stuff apart anyway. And I'd been doing tech for about 15 years or a little bit less at the time. But I'd never done anything exactly like this. So I sort of used it as a way of developing my skills. Not that I was learning on the fly. Like I said, I've already set up servers and I've done audio since I was little, and so I had experience here and there. But to integrate it all and to do live things and take calls and put people on hold and all that stuff, there was very little we could pull off the shelf. So we had to code this stuff, and we had to come up with procedures and protocols for how we would screen hosts and how we would do a lot of this other stuff. Now, I will try my best to not sound like I'm taking anything away from Mike. It was run slightly differently with Mike. In a way, he's a little bit more technical in some ways with the coding and stuff than I was. But he was very good with he was very good with the tech stuff. And I was a little bit better with people. And Mike didn't quite have or lost somewhere along the way the necessary ability, in my opinion. I think that we should always, if we're any type of leader in this, we should always have our eyes out. We should always be scanning for people of talent, people who are interested, who can be brought up along with us, so that A, we're not some Hitler on a molehill somewhere, not some big man on a molehill accepting donations somewhere, so that we have some type of infrastructure. I mean, God forbid somebody gets the flu or gets hit by a car. Have something that keeps it going. Or if we do get burned out, whether that's a real phenomenon or not, you know, we're going to have children get sick. We're going to have, you know, wives and families and lives and college degrees and, you know, jobs and stuff like this. And until we can hire people and put them on salary, then it's going to be that dynamic's going to be there to a large extent. We'll get rid of a lot of that once we can put people out. But, you know, that's a standard deviation above and beyond what anyone I know that I've done.
Well, Mischko seemed to have been well liked at VNN. Why was he in such a why was he such urgency in you two starting something new?
Well, okay, so, and I do have some notes on this because there have been some things that even people that profess to be closer to the genesis of this thing, they profess to be a little bit closer than I think they actually were. Mark Faust, I'm looking in your direction, brother. Mark Faust is my friend, and I miss him. I haven't spoke to him in a while. But I would correct a lot of the things that he's written. And he's wrong about a giant donation of $20,000. Nothing like that. I mean, he might be counting three or four people having said that there was an X number donation, and he may have be counting that and like adding it all up. Maybe that's how he arrived at that number. But anyway, point being, the real beginning was that the old server at VNN Forum was no good. Every time we would start a broadcast, it would crash the server. No one could get on the forum for a little while, which kind of, it's not very good if you want to put links on the forum and have people join your show or join in, listen in, call in, whatever. So the forum would crash from the stress on the server. And then we upgraded the server, and then the forum would crash if it was over 100 people. And it was just constantly. And it was a group of people separately from this situation came to Alex Linder, who's the proprietor of VNN Forum and VNN.com or GoVNN.com, and a really good writer. But they came to him and said, look, we want to dedicate a fund for getting this media stuff going. We have a handful of people, because we had Skype chats going and stuff like that. So people were getting together and forming their own ideas, and they were saying, hey, let's upgrade this stuff. You know, for whatever reason, these guys are worth listening to, and it's not very high quality. Let's up the quality. Let's see if we can make it better. And they came to Alex saying, we want to do X amount per month to go to media. And that was shot down. And my understanding is that he denies this. So I'm going to say one thing, and Alex Linder says another thing. So whatever. Here it goes. At the end of the day, Alex Linder said, and he was talking about the money, I need that to live. Okay. So however you come down on this whole thing, he told me that I need that money to live. So he did not want to dedicate that money. So, because I was trying to always keep it under the auspices of VNN Forum, if nothing else, it was less work for me because I was already administrator there. And I had plans laid out for in the future for growing VNN and for getting some of the mess kind of corralled a little bit, which was subsequently done. I'm glad to see that. But so we had this group of donors, and they were very angry with Linder, and I was trying to steer them away from that. You know, we can't build something. If you guys want to build something, you can't build it at being mad at somebody, especially somebody ostensibly on our side. You have to build it on something positive. Like, we want to do this, not like we want to get away from this. You have to be positive and want to go do something. So they did that. So we put together a thing, and this is actually, you know, if you've ever done investments or anything like that, anybody out there, it's a lot more worth it to say, you know, here's $50 or here's, you know, $50. It's actually a lot more valuable to say, here's $10 for the next 5 months. It's a lot more valuable to say, here's $20 for the next 5 months. So if you know you have that money coming in, you can have outlays, and you can say, okay, we can procure this stuff, and then we can pay for the next X amount of month, so we can bootstrap this thing until we have enough listeners, enough donations, so that we can, you know, sort of get this thing kickstarted. And that's what the special projects unit did. That was what this group of donors ended up calling itself, and they were very valuable to VOR, and they wanted to do several projects. I've heard stories that they bailed on us and stuff like that. That's not true at all. They said, we want to do several projects, political projects, and getting a media project started is one of them. Getting a media project started. They did not plan to – their goal was not to support us forever and ever, amen. Okay, so be bad-mouthing those guys. When you read the message that I wrote that, oh, you know, we could have involved them more or too bad, you know, that's sort of that sometimes gets me in trouble. I'm a little, you know, I wax philosophical sometimes. We part the most positive of circumstances, as I recall. I don't recall any problems with guys in the SPU, guys and girls in the SPU. So that was when I was saying, you know, we could have kept them more informed, or we could have, you know, you can always do better no matter what you do. But I'm pretty sure that to the man, people from the SPU contacted me and said, you know, that's not it at all. You know, we're moving on, or we're doing this or that. So that actually wasn't the thing that was sort of me.
Yeah, taking some blame for it. Well, I can accept that. So what you're saying is that they were willing to help you out in the beginning and get you started, but they weren't going to just be their money bags forever, and they had other things they wanted to do after a certain period of time.
So that was the stated goal. We'll help you get started.
Much help did you get? I mean, how much help did VOR have to begin on? Because, you know, at the White Network, we just started with nothing, and we haven't put much money into it at all. We just only enter the server. Everything else is being done. We haven't bought anything because Tan created the software himself, what we have so far.
Right, but that's actually – that's a lot of human capital to write.
Oh, a huge amount of work on his part, which is why he should – if anybody would get any financial largesse from this, it should be him. Because I always think that people who are working behind the scenes and doing all that work that nobody notices, you know, the ones who need to be paid first, if anybody's going to be paid.
The easy part's putting on the headset, turning on the mic and such.
That's right.
You know, just from your guest who's going to be one of your new hosts, you know, there are technical issues no matter what. And we tried to iron that stuff out, and we tried to spend a little bit of coin and getting a good broadcast quality. You know, the whole philosophical issue about the internet is, hey, it levels the playing field. It's only a matter of coding a prettier website that separates us from CNN, for instance. We could be just as good as CNN, or we can look just as good as them, rather. Well, we wanted to sound as good as we could. We wanted to compete with the big guys. We wanted... Overall, my idea of VOR was, I want, you know, I'm a college guy. I go to school. I have these colleagues who I know would come down on our side. They're just either cowards or they're brainwashed. And I know, because I was brainwashed at one point, more or less. You know, I didn't see things for what they were. I readily admit that. But I think a lot of other people, and I couldn't help but think that a lot of other people were in the same position. So my idea was, hey, you know, I want 5 minutes with the old Dietrich. If I can get 5 minutes with him, what would keep him up at night? You know, what would cause him to grow a spine, politically speaking, and you know, be able to see things for what they are, and to reject the system that is so ready to reject him? So that was the goal of VOR, and for that you need good quality. People place a lot of, you know, I read a lot of spilled ink on audio quality and, you know, connecting callers and how smoothly a broadcast works and how good a person sounds. I mean, we use money to buy microphones and audio interfaces for computers, audio interfaces for the servers, and stuff like that, just to up the quality. Right, we had dual servers because from day one we were getting denial of service attacks, so we could switch over servers. We didn't look like some ragtag hour gang type of thing, and that's what I wanted to do from the get go. And I can't take responsibility for what happened after I was there, although I and honestly I don't really know what had the website looks great. I know that, but did a really good job. I mean, we managed, and you're about to experience it now. When as you start taking on other people, you get all these conflicting personalities, and you get the Big Ten approach versus the Little Ten approach, and no, you get people who are willing to tear each other's throat out, who agree on 99 and 44 100% of, you know. You walk around.
Well, you have big people who are feel big in their own right, like John DeNugent and Peter Schenck. And I don't know if they had any problem, but I understand that there were, you know, there were just these philosophical squabbles or personality disputes or whatever, and people got mad and marched off. Well, what is the reason? I would really like to know. What is the reason for Peter Schenck leaving? What happened there that he quit broadcasting?
Peter Schenck was – Peter Schenck came along shortly after we announced our intentions. We thought it a pretty big score. I had a contact with a friend of mine, the late Byron Yost, who I missed from time to time, who knew Peter Schenck. And he was very excited about the project, but he wanted to be more than just a broadcaster. He wanted to come on. And he wanted to sort of take some reins and have some pull. And
Peter did.
I can't really grief him because he worked at a network, and he was getting all kinds of grief for, you know, not falling into line. So I think his knee-jerk reaction was to, you know, take reins of something so that he could, but. I wasn't quite ready to let him 100% take the reins. You know, if he would have been happy with like 85%, he would have worked out much better. But he had a little bit of a problem. He went down from, he used to do 5 days a week, I believe, and he went down to 1 or 2 days a week, because quote unquote, you know, Dietrich's not a Christian, right? So because he always had to, he was getting burned out. There's that word again, but he was getting burned out, but pulling back because, but always blaming it on someone else instead of saying, hey, you know, okay, 5 days a week is really ambitious. Let's pull back. And on one hand, it's hard to take anything away from Peter because he did do a lot of content for VOR, and a lot of it that I listened to is pretty good. But, I think at the end of the day, the way Peter Schenck ended his tenure at VOR, what happened was that I was absentee at that point, and, he is a station manager, but just with the express condition that he would not hire or fire anyone without running it by me first. Me and
sure.
And knowing that Michigan was going to contact me, we'd talk it out and then whatever. So instead of hiring and firing, he could be in control of broadcasting. And he basically fired some hosts that we had. Not exactly dearly, not integral to the network type of hosts, but it was still a warning sign that this happened days after we said, you know, here's the one rule, right? You had one rule, and he couldn't handle that for more than a few days. So we sort of tried to rein him back in, and he said, well, I'm just not going to do it unless I can have control over the network. And we let him go at that point. And I think he was really hurt about that. His producer ended up leaving him and siding with VOR. He said he was going to go do something on his own, as a lot of hosts do when they leave. They say they're going to go do something on their own. Never created any type of anything. And frankly, I don't have any hard feelings against him. I think he got really emotional over some things that didn't require such emotion. But
well, I was on his he had a kind of a forum or something, or discussion group or something, that I was on, I think after he got kicked off of RBN, and I think that's when it was. And I know that we started arguing a lot. He really came after me finally, because I was kind of arguing at that time, or, you know, feeling at that time on the non-Christian side. And he was so adamant about, I know what it was. It was that Western civilization was based on Christianity, and I was taking a different view, and a few people, but he just sort of focused on me, and he got really upset about that. He's very, very adamant about what he believes is right. If he thinks it's right, there's no doubt in his mind. I mean, there really is no leeway.
Well, and usually, I think my experience sort of bears out, well, I think it does, that, you know, my approach, I think, works. You know, I have a really, for lack of a better nomenclature, you know, I'm, I guess, a pretty tolerant approach. You know, I tolerate Christians. I respect Christians. My belief, I'm not a Christian personally, but my belief is that any type of movement in the foreseeable future that we can try to analyze and think about now is going to have Christians. You know, Christians are like 75-80% of this country. We are going to have a Christian movement in this country no matter what. Now, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be carrying crosses into the streets or whatever, but you're not going to have an explicitly atheistic nationalist movement in this country. And no one's done that. No one's going to do it for the foreseeable future. It's going to be 100 years before you're able to pull off anything different. With that said, people don't understand. Christians usually don't lead with this type of thing. If you can respect them enough, most Christians, the bulk of Christians, especially the ones that are nationalists, won't be as tied up into this stuff as, for instance, I mean, look how many Christians respected William Pierce, right?
Well, sure, I agree with you. I think that they're goaded into it by some of these kind of fanatical anti-Christians that I noticed. And even Alex Linder falls into that, who just have to tear into Christianity with such force. And I'm with you. I believe that we all have to be tolerant of one another's religions, but we stand together on race. Maybe you would be interested in being a host on the White Network, Dietrich.
If I could rub the other 15 minutes, I'd take you up on it. But maybe that's a conversation for another time. But I think Christianity deserves all kinds of critique, and Christian nationalists have to be willing to put up with that. And they better damn well come up with answers to it. Excuse me, phone ring. Okay, so, Christian nationalists better be prepared to deal with that critique and rebut it or whatnot. But I think what we all need to be prepared to do, if we're going to have any answer come up, is that your 60-second mark?
Yes, it is.
Well, anyway.
So go ahead.
We should be able to concentrate on step – if we're on step two, let's concentrate on step 3, 4, 5, 6 instead of 4,247 – 4,248 and et cetera. You know, I think it's very short sighted, or maybe perhaps too sighted, to be arguing. It's like we're arguing over foreign policy of a future nationalist state when,
That's right. We're nowhere close to that. So, Dietrich, I hope we've made up some here, and I would certainly invite you to come on again. I'll talk to you about that if you'd like to come on again, and we can go into some of these issues more. I apologize for my email account. And I accept what you say. So I know you are very busy, and I hope for the best for you and your family and your brand new baby. So thanks a lot, Dietrich. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is it for today. And thank you for listening, and come back next time.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.